We believe that it's really important for women to gather together in sacred space. So the whole gathering is in a ceremonial space. We open with an opening circle. We enter through a gateway where we're smudged and bathed with plants and setting intentions for the gathering. And we come together in this sacred way and drop in and really spend time learning from each other. We have, I think, 13 teachers this year teaching plant medicine classes. So really getting back to our roots as women and understanding how to care for ourselves and how to care for our families and our community.
And why women? Why is this festival around herbal medicine and everything that herbs can do? Why women specifically?
I see in my experience of going to other women's gatherings for the past 20 years that something special is really created when women gather together, especially with the intent of being in a ceremonial space, that it's sort of like the Moon Lodge, where women have always gathered in the red tent when we are on our menstrual cycles throughout time. And so this is a way to take us out of sort of the general day-to-day living of we're busy in school and this and that, and to just come together and, you know, be together in this simple way, learning from each other and getting out of our day-to-day, you know, life, basically.
There seems to be such a long history of women as healers, and particularly around maybe natural medicine, or is that just a stereotype? I mean, what is the reality around women specifically as healers in this realm that you're focusing on, which is herbal medicine?
Well, you know, the wise woman tradition that Susan Weed teaches about, and she's one of my main teachers, she talks about how women's wisdom and women's medicine is often very invisible. So the kids are sick and we make chicken soup, or we make a special tea or a special popsicle or this kind of thing. And so we often, learn it from our mothers or our aunties or our grandmothers. And a lot of that in some ways is being lost. We're not spending as much time with our family and the elders and the community and this kind of thing. So this is another way to gather together and to teach each other all the things that we've learned from our families and our friends and our teachers.
And of course, the booming pharmaceutical industry, I think, has made a lot of people less trusting of their instinct, maybe as a healer. As you said, it's almost like kind of mom medicine, I've heard it described as, is that very often parents and certainly mothers kind of instinctively know just how to deal with this. But now with the advertising with the pharmaceutical industry, and certainly just with how all of that industry has developed, as you said, we seem to have lost some of that.
Yeah, and herbal medicine is people's medicine. I mean, most of the herbs that I use grow wild around here. This time of year, we're outside every day harvesting plants that I'll use all year long for my family and my friends and my clients. So it's really inexpensive and really accessible. And Amanda, who's here with us, is teaching an amazing class on how to make your own herbal remedies at home with plants that you can easily grow in your garden, buy at Rebecca's here in Boulder, or find in the wild.
Well, Amanda Klenner, you are indeed going to be teaching and leading a workshop there. What are some of the herbs that are out and about, either growing in this region wild, or that we could be growing, cultivating in our gardens, that could be used therapeutically instead of just culinary?
Well, you know, that's a whole class. I teach a year-long apprenticeship on that. But what I've been harvesting recently, there's a weed out right now. It's called gumweed or grindalia. It's this sticky, sticky, sappy flower with these beautiful orange petals, and it makes a fantastic cough medicine. And it is a weed. It is everywhere, and it is invasive. Another invasive weed is mullein. And we all know, or most people know, I mean, even lay people know that mullein leaf is said to be good for coughs. But this time of year, we also harvest the flowers for inflammation. And in the fall, we harvest the root for back pain. You know, and so there are a lot of fantastic, abundant weeds. I was also harvesting Monarda last week, bee balm that grows wild here. So there's a ton of beautiful, abundant medicine just growing right around here.
Well, it's one thing to identify the correct weed, as it's often referred to, or the correct herbal medicine, as you're referring to it as. But then what do you do with it? I mean, there's so often you have to distill it or you have to treat it. It's not just ingesting the plant itself.
That's true. And people think it's much more complicated than it is to make herbal medicine. It is so simple to dry some leaves and make a tea. It is completely simple to chop up some herb and add some alcohol and make a tincture. And it's very easy in our very metric, very what's the word? Linear-minded people who want step-by-step instructions and want to do everything, especially just very specifically, and very according exactly to directions. And we can do that with herbal medicine. But I find that the folk medicine, the way that people would make it, the way our grandmas made it, is completely simple. It works very well and is so easy to understand. If you just had somebody sit down and show you that you can just chop up some plant, add alcohol, and then it's a tincture 6 weeks later, it's not hard. And so that's kind of my approach to my class that I will be teaching at the gathering. It's an intensive where we're just going to sit down and make medicine. And when people walk away, they're going to walk away with medicine that they made. They're going to walk away with the knowledge that this is not rocket science. Anybody can make a tea. Anybody can make a tincture. Anybody can make a salve. And we can really take our own health into our own hands.
Well, this really seems to be moving beyond a step beyond what I've been referring to as herbal medicine, because that in and of itself is a massive industry as well. You're really talking about kind of taking ownership of that and creating the medicine from the plants. Is there a downside to this? I mean, there are some plants that are poisonous. I mean, could people really do themselves some harm unless they're doing it in the right way? Just because it's folk or an ancient remedy doesn't mean it's
that's
safe.
True. Yeah, that's true. The plants I work with are generally safe plants. I don't tend to work with plants that, you know, like foxglove. You know, if you take too much, you're going to die. I tend to work with the nutritive plants, the gentle plants, the nettles, the mullein, the grindalia, things that are simple and easy to identify and that are safe to use. I publish an herbal magazine, and in that we also focus on plants that are simple to identify, easy to use, and that aren't going to have a lot of negative side effects. It's important that people identify plants properly, and this is something I definitely go through in all of my classes. If you're going to be wild harvesting plants, you need to know exactly what you're picking and how to use it effectively. But most of the things I teach, I'm not really worried a ton about safety because I don't teach unsafe plants. There are unsafe plants out there, but I find people have to worry much more about mushrooms than they do about plants.
Who are the keepers of this knowledge? I mean, traditionally, I think it's been either people might think it's indigenous communities that do it, or our grandparents, our grandmothers. And when we stop that transmission of knowledge, who then gets to be the keeper of this type of knowledge?
It's a really good question. I think that depends on the culture. A lot of indigenous people have held onto their healing practices. A lot of them have lost them. Traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine didn't lose a lot of knowledge during the Middle Ages, like Western medicine did. And when I say Western medicine, I mean Western herbalism. There was a very big dark age where the knowledge was controlled mostly by educated men, and they really preferred, instead of these gentle remedies that I talk about that I use a lot, the nutritive remedies, the things that can be food or medicine, they liked using the lobelia and the really powerful herbs, which have a place, but it's a more masculine energy to the healing. I think a lot of the grandmas carried it through in the Western tradition. A lot of the women, the people who were healing, the hedge witches is what they're called, but
the midwives,
you know, my grandma, when we were sick, would always make us a special soup and a special tea. My mom didn't do that. There was just a loss of knowledge. And I think that loss of knowledge has happened over the last 100 years of just traditional remedies. But in the Middle Ages and Western herbalism, we lost just a ridiculous amount of knowledge that we're kind of regaining. So I think American Western herbalism is interesting because we kind of combine all of the traditions we can find into a model that fits our own understanding. And one of the really interesting things I find about Western herbalists is we all have our own different ways of doing things. None of us does something exactly the same. Where in Chinese medicine and in Ayurveda, there are a lot of consistency through practices. In Western herbalism, yeah, you'll find people like my skin salve is just about the same as everybody else's skin salve without, you know, depending on ratios or whatever. But the way I handle certain clinical cases is completely different than the way another Western herbalist might, just because our educations are different and where we're pulling from, our knowledge base is different.
Well, this is the Red Earth Women's Herbal Gathering. Does that mean men have no place in either herbal folk medicine, or are men allowed to come and participate in this? Jessica Bates, you're also part of helping to organize it.
Yes, I think that one of the wonderful things about Red Earth Herbal Gathering is the men who are standing in support of us. Behind the scenes is so many men who are helping us out, who are carrying us through this, who are helping watch our children while we're doing tons of work, who are really holding us here.
And I know that you welcome all women, and this is something that you really specify on the website, certainly, and in the description. Astrid, do you want to just talk about that? It's all women, all people who identify as women, trans women, GLBTQ women, everybody is welcome at this. I talk about why you are so determined to have such an open, kind of inclusive realm for this.
I would say that starts with the original vision that Leela and I had. It wasn't so clearly that it was definitely going to always be a women's gathering, that we were going to start with women, like all life begins in the womb and begins with women. So we thought we would start with women and see where it went. And, you know, we do want to be all inclusive. So, you know, we're working to just allow anyone who is identifying as a woman to be with us and to feel welcomed in their femininity and whatever, however that is for them in their bodies and in their lives. And then also on the topic of that is that this year is the first year that we're having it 2 days. There's an overnight. You can buy a 1 day ticket. We just opened up 1 day tickets, and boys are welcome. So we have a children's program where boys through their seventh year can be with us. We have several boys registered. We're really excited. And we also have a girls coming of age program where young women, 11 to 15, who are just starting their menstrual cycle, come together with Laureen Wapatich, who is an amazing local woman who will be guiding them and teaching them and then leading them through a coming of age ceremony that they will be witnessed by the entire community at the very end. So this is something that we all here, sitting here, Amanda, Jessica, and I, we all have daughters. And we will one day be able to watch our daughters go through this, and they'll be there with us watching the ceremony unfold year after year until it's their turn. And how amazing to have that opportunity as young girls. I know most women don't have that, and I know most women wish that they had some sacred acknowledgement. So.